expect you to, you've never been asleep. You wouldn't believe the things that I have seen. How could I expect you to, you've never been asleep?
Hello everyone, and welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, episode 27, reviewing the episode Motel California, which is episode 6 of season 3 of MTV's Teen Wolf. As usual, if you want to talk to us about Teen Wolf, you can always reach us on our Twitter, which is NATWpodcast, our email, which is natwpodcast@gmail.com, or our Tumblr, which is notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com. This episode is our special guest host competition winner episode, one of the biggest episodes of the season, so we decided to celebrate a little. So tonight, well, today, or it's a different time of day for everyone here, we have me and Karen, as usual. So hi, Karen.
Hello.
And then we have our competition winner, Sarah. So hello, Sarah. How are you?
Hi. I'm okay. I'm really warm. I'm in Ireland and we're going through a bit of a heat wave at the moment, and I'm not built to cope with these temperatures.
Yeah, I've heard. I mean, I've was just in the UK. I was just in England just for a couple of weeks ago, and it was not yet hot. It was kind of, it was a bit warm at the beginning of my stay, and then it actually went to kind of a bit nasty towards the end. And then you guys all over the British Isles got this heat wave, and no one there seems to be able to process it. And it's, I've seen the temperatures. It's warm, but it's not that warm. Like, you guys in over there are just not used to any type of heat at all. It's about, no. It's about what, like 28 degrees Celsius or something for you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's 28, 29.
It's warm. I'm not going to lie to you and say it's not a nice hot day, but it's not. We have like a law here that says like if it goes over like 40 degrees Celsius in the summer, that it the schools get closed basically, because our summer is the end of the year. And that never happened to me, but it does happen, and we get heat waves of kind of, yeah, 35 to 38 degrees, which is, you literally can't move. So hope you guys are actually enjoying it, because if it gets a lot hotter than that, you will not enjoy it anymore.
No, it's not too bad. It's just very unusual for our summer to be this hot.
Yeah, where in Ireland are you?
I'm in Northern Ireland, actually, sort of in the south of Northern Ireland, which is completely confusing. but, yeah.
Cool.
Sort of, I know you did the Glee podcast, if you remember the vanishing Rory from one of the seasons.
Yeah, oh, I do. Oh, I do.
He comes from...
Pointless Rory.
I can drive about an hour and get to where he comes from, so I'm near him.
Okay, so did you watch the... Do you watch Teen Wolf when it comes out in the US, like on a live stream or anything like that, or do you sort of watch it the afternoon afterwards? Because I found a real problem with actually catching up on my podcasts when I was in the UK was the time zone jump is really inconvenient unless we can get people in America to record in the mornings, where usually we record in an evening on American time, and that's like 2 in the morning for the UK. So do you stay up and watch it, or...?
I did last night just because I wanted to be super prepared, but it's the first time I've actually watched a live stream, and it was really annoying because
yeah,
I kept getting
the
adverts
best.
And pop-ups, and usually I just wait until the next day when there's usually some form of download somewhere. Not that I'm condoning the use of illegal downloading.
It becomes necessary to keep up with doing work on a website that operates on American time, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yes, so we're not going to tell anyone particularly how they can download the episodes, but it's obviously a fact that we have to do it.
Yeah.
MTV is actually pretty good at putting them online on the MTV website, but that also requires a slightly illegal, but slightly more ethical way of accessing them, in which you get an IP changer, which basically allows you to access American or British websites, if you know, depending on where you're from, for the ones that have, you know, region blocking for some reason. So if you watch it if I watch it through the MTV website, MTV still gets the hits or whatever, but I have to do something to my computer to let me look at the MTV website. I don't know why they have that region blocking. Karen, do you know why they do that?
No, I don't. I feel very under pressure right now. I have no control over it, you guys.
Karen, make them stop. Make them stop on behalf of America. No, it just confuses me. I just don't know why they do it. I don't get who gains, like, by region-locking content on websites. I genuinely have no idea. So if anyone has the legitimate answer to that, I'd like to know, because we're very confused sometimes. Anyway, so we're in three time zones, three nationalities. We're all here together, bonding over some fictional teen werewolves that were never meant to make us cry. Right, guys?
Yeah.
So, yes, episode Motel California. Do you want to go ahead, Karen?
Yeah, the synopsis reads, Scott and the gang undergo strange experiences when they are stranded at a motel, causing them to believe members of their own group may be the mysterious killer's newest targets. Meanwhile, Scott, unaware that Derek is alive, suffers emotionally, thinking he caused Derek's death in the battle. So this was a pretty intense episode, but it was also really funny. So which were your two favorite lines, Sarah?
Well, I've got two funny lines of my own. The first one is Miss Blake, whenever she takes off Derek's top and looks at his wound, she says, to be honest, the oh my god would be for your unbelievable physique if it weren't for the fact that you're bleeding black blood. And then the second one is Styles, when they find the clippings in the Bible. It's, that's a beautiful thing. Most places leave a mint under the pillow. This one leaves a record of all the horrible deaths that occurred.
That particular quote, that's a beautiful thing, most places leave a mint under the pillow, I really, yeah, that one really got me, because it was in one of those unexpected moments of sort of very serious issues, and they just pull out like one of those sarcastic lines that you sort of don't expect to laugh at, and it kind of makes the trauma worse sometimes.
Yeah. So what about you, Natalie?
Okay, my two, one of them was funny, and it was Coach at the beginning, and it was when they're all getting off the bus, and it was just him saying when they arrived, this is the closest motel with the most vacancies and the least amount of good judgment when it comes to accepting a bunch of degenerates like yourselves. And I just, it's just a beautiful sentence, really. It's just, it's so convoluted, and I just found it hilarious. He was, you know, obviously a high comedy point of the episode, though. I wonder how he spent his night. I was just like, I know that not everyone in the motel got affected by the results of the whole issue that went on, but I wonder how the coach, you know, what the coach's night was like. But my other quote was, my second quote is one from sort of the high point of drama in the episode, sort of the big conversation between Scott and Styles, which is basically a pretty big, not a turning point, but a pretty big sort of emotional crux where Styles sort of steps over the line of gasoline and he says, all right, so if you're going to do this, I think you're going to have to take me with you. And it's just, it's actually very difficult to tell whether he's saying this completely as a bluff or whether he means it, because I think that it can be looked at a few ways. I think that it is one that, like, there is no denying the extreme emotion of it, and I was pretty much crying a lot. But the fact of the matter is, he was trying to disarm Scott, and he wouldn't have done it, I think, he wouldn't have put himself into that situation if he wasn't willing to deal with the consequences, obviously. But I wonder, it makes me wonder what percentage of his brain thought it was going to work. and what percentage is like, well, you know, this is what's going to happen if it doesn't work, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think he definitely knew the risk that he was taking, but at the same time, I think, like, the risk was sort of negligible because other than his father, I think Scott is, like, the only other person that he probably wouldn't really want to live without. So I think he was pretty much saying, like, if you're going to die, then I'm going to go down with you because I can't stand, you know, not having you around anymore, because they are best friends. And we'll get into this a little bit when I read my quote, but some of the things he says just makes it really obvious how close those two are.
Yeah.
So my first quote was from Allison, and she's talking to Lydia, and this is after Lydia tells her that she's been hearing voices and stuff, and Allison says, after everything we've been through, I believe you. And I picked this line because it was really nice not to have to deal with the whole, like, oh, she's hearing voices, she must just be crazy, you know, this isn't true, I don't believe you type of thing, because that gets old pretty fast. And I like that Allison was just trusting in Lydia and supported her and said, you know, let's just figure out what's going on.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I thought the same thing. I was like, it's really good that, yeah, that she was just straight up like, yeah, if you say this, then I believe you, because there's no reason, you know, it might not be, you know, I'm not saying it's real, but I believe you. There's clearly something, you know, happening. I'm not saying that it's something in the physical world, but we all know that we're not dealing with that anymore. And I really liked that aspect as well. And you're right, it does save a lot of time, and it wouldn't really be appropriate to have a whole, oh, are you hearing things? What's going on? Oh, we don't believe you kind of thing. We are past that. And it is a really good, yeah, it's a really good point.
And then my second quote is sort of a continuation of Natalie's previous one. And it's at that same point with the gas and Stiles and Scott. And Stiles says, Scott, just listen to me. You're not no one. You're someone. You're my best friend. I need you. Scott, you're my brother. And I think this is probably the point where a lot of people just started bawling their eyes out. It was a really emotional scene, and it was just really beautiful what Stiles said to Scott. And I just really loved that, you know, he took that risk not knowing what exactly was going to happen, because we know that Scott was under the influences of the Wolfsbane and that he was very distressed and, you know, he had just seen his mother killed, even if it wasn't real. So I really appreciate what Stiles did there, and the line was just really beautiful.
Yeah.
Dylan's acting at that point was just amazing.
Yeah, him starting to cry was, yeah, not okay. yeah, but yeah, the way that he said, like, Scott, you're my brother, that just broke something. I don't know. It was just, yeah, I mean, we've obviously talked a lot about Scott and Stiles' friendship, and it's just something that, you know, as we've said, hasn't been that affirmed before, that it's something that they might have taken each other for granted, or that they might have not even been friends that long, or something that's actually being discussed in fandom at the moment, which I completely agree with, is that they may have been friends as kids and then not for a while, and then they became friends again in high school, which makes sense with the way that they've talked about some stuff in the past. Maybe not that they hated each other, but that, you know, one of them moved or they were just less close and that they became re-close. And we haven't had sort of that much canon affirmation of what they meant to each other, you know, because they were very used to each other, but, you know, and they're very natural with each other, but they don't often talk about their emotions like that. And yeah, I mean, the fact that Stiles, like, rather than Allison as well, was the one to talk him down, and that it worked, you know, when we've seen two seasons of how Allison is the only one that moves him and Allison is his anchor and all of this stuff. Not that I'm discrediting Allison, because I really love her and I do like her relationship with Scott, but the fact that it was Styles in this situation, I think, felt really right.
This was the episode that Dylan wrote a scene, wasn't it?
Yes.
Do we know what scene that is?
Yes, we do. It was the scene between Scott and Styles straight after the credits, so where they're discussing who the suspect is in, you know, about who the might be doing the murders.
Ah, okay. Because I didn't know what scene he had done, and I thought, wouldn't it have been amazing if he'd written that part for himself?
Yeah.
During that moment.
It would have. I think that given that he, like, wrote a scene for this episode, I wouldn't be surprised if there was, like, some input with Styles in general in this episode, and that I don't think that Jeff would have just wrote that down on a piece of paper and given it to Styles, given it to Dylan, if you know what I mean. I feel like that there would have been, you know, some sort of development or discussion of the character in regards to this scene, like with Dylan. Going straight into the episode, the first thing that I just wanted to mention is actually, it's called Motel California, as in a reference to the Eagles song Hotel California. And I'm not going to sit here and recite the entire lyrics of the song to you. It is a dramatic reading. I could, but I'm not going to.
Didn't you say you wanted to sing, Natalie? I'm pretty sure I heard that.
I'm not going
to
sing. I was so uncontrollably tempted to sing the intro of Welcome to the Hotel California when I was opening the podcast, but I'm not going to do that. Anyway, I would love to know more about how they came up with every concept in this episode, you know, and the idea of the motel and everything like that. But the basis could potentially come from the song. I mean, the title's definitely a reference, but the basis could definitely come from a song because it's about basically a hotel, you know, a haunted hotel, basically someone coming in and that there's this hotel proprietor and basically who traps everyone's souls, and these people just sort of live there in a kind of, I guess, not like a time loop or something, but like it's just basically a ghostly place, and the guy can't ever get out of there. I mean, the last lines are like, you can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. But the one lyric that really stuck with me that I related to the episode more than anything is the woman in the song saying to the guy who gets caught there, we are all just prisoners here of our own device. And I think that idea was such an important idea to the episode, given the way that all of the werewolves reacted to whatever was going on with them, that it was all stuff that they were torturing themselves about, their worst fears and ideas, that it was not anything external, that it was everything coming out of personal guilt or personal fear or personal memories. And the prisoners of our own device idea really kept sticking with me while I watched the episode.
Yeah, I think it's really obvious just from, like, all of them really, but Boyd and Isaac in particular, I think you can just really see the guilt that they struggle with, so it would make sense that they would kind of take that line and just run with it.
I think Ethan's is from guilt as well, but we'll get to that, because Ethan, in this episode, Ethan's stuff, I was just like, oh, I have a whole backstory for you now, okay? Like, I think they built a lot with Ethan in this episode. But anyway, the first scene is like a flashback to the 70s where we see a guy checking into the motel with a sort of bloodied hand, and we find out he has a wound on his side and that he sort of examines this, then, you know, kills himself in the hotel, shoots himself. And as he dies, we see his ID and that he is an Argent, and Alexander Argent, and that we had and that he had killed himself because he'd received a werewolf bite and he didn't want to be a werewolf, and that's what you do in this family, apparently. And then it cuts basically straight from that to the present day of the kids pulling up at the same hotel. So, I mean, how much did you guys know about this episode before you saw it? So what did you make of that whole introduction?
I'd literally only just seen the trailer, so whenever it started, because I was on the stream, I was like, have I got the right link? I didn't really know what was going on until it's panned down to his name being Argent, and then I thought, okay, yeah, I've got this right.
Yeah, it was a little disconcerting at first, just because you don't realize until they zoom up on the newspaper that we're in the past, and you kind of don't really know who this random guy is until they zoom up on the license. But I mean, it's supposed to be like that. You're supposed to not really know what's going on at first, but it was interesting, and I liked that they sort of did this at the beginning and then brought it back around to the end, and everything kind of tied in together.
Yeah, I'm still a bit confused about how it's going to be tied in potentially in the future. I mean, if it was just a coincidence that, I mean, this thing has clearly been going on in this hotel for a long time. And the fact that this guy was an Argent and he got a bite, whether it was just a coincidence or whether something has actually been influencing this forever. Because we don't know whether the suicide count in this hotel is actually natural, or if there is something they're making people want to kill themselves outside of their control, because the suicides there that we do hear about, like the ones that we hear of voices, I mean, I'm not going to say that any of them were good ideas, because they weren't, but they, none of them seemed like outside of their own influence, if you know what I mean, as opposed to the ones we see in the episode with the students, with the werewolves. So do we think that the hotel before this moment is just, you know, a natural phenomenon, like, you know, that it has this kind of, you know, nasty reputation, or do we think that there's always been something about it?
I was thinking about this at the time, and I sort of thought at the end of the episode, what if there'd been maybe a couple of suicides and then it sort of turned into the place where people went, if that's what they were going to do?
Yeah, I think that that's, you know, not unlikely. There are definitely places like that in the world. There's like a woods somewhere in Japan that's like a suicide wood, and that they have to go in there every, it's like a really abandoned wood, and it's like the spot to do it apparently, and they have to go out there and in there every couple of months or whatever and like search for bodies. It's, you know, so there are definitely places like that in the world, but I can't work out in that case whether Argent being there is a coincidence. The one thing that made me, you know, think that maybe before this moment it wasn't, you know, supernaturally influenced is that Chris Argent, he, you know, when Allison spoke to him, you know, he said, you know, she told him where it was and he said, oh yeah, I think I've heard of it. And he clearly knew this family story about his uncle, but he didn't, like, race out there and insist that she leave. So he clearly didn't think there was anything that wrong with it, just that it was a bit horrible.
I keep likening it to the Hellmouth from Buffy. I don't know if that's really the case or not, but it seemed like, because there were so many suicides, and I think, like, what did Lydia say? There were almost 5 a year or something like that. I mean, that's quite a lot. And so, yeah, I like the theory that maybe at first it wasn't anything to do with, you know, people being drawn there or whatnot, but maybe after a while it kind of started doing that. That could be interesting.
Yeah. Do you want to go into the Styles scene? Go on.
So in the next scene, we get Styles and his list of suspects. And this was a pretty funny scene, but it also kind of brought us into his mind to let us know who he actually think is going around doing these things, who he suspects. And so the one funny line on there I think was just kind of a throwaway, but it does show how much he doesn't trust Derek still, was that Derek was on his list twice. So what did you guys think of that?
I think that he still likes to think that Derek is a villain, even though he knows he's not, if you know what I mean, because Derek clearly didn't make the top spots. He wasn't one of the actual suspects that he narrowed it down to. But I think sometimes Styles will never really believe that Derek isn't the big bad wolf, if you know what I mean, because, you know, he's been so creeped out by him in the past and that it's taken so long for them to work together in any way, despite the fact that they're always, you know, saving each other's asses or whatever. And I think that he's just automatic go-to bad guy, Derek, and I just think it's funny.
Yeah, and then we get Harris next, and Harris doesn't really seem to have a top spot either. I mean, he did at first, but I think Styles sort of discounted him. But I found it really interesting that we supposedly saw Harris's death, but he hasn't actually been found yet. So do you guys think he's still alive?
No.
No.
I don't either.
Here's what I want to know. I remember one of the, like, spoiler pictures or Twitter pictures or something being, like, for this season being, like, a Beacon Hills memorial concert thing for, like, presumably, like, dead people at the school. Like, it was something for the school, like, a memorial concert. And I thought that that was actually from one of the earlier episodes. So it hasn't shown up yet. So now I don't know what that was meant to be from. So maybe they'll find his body and they will have a memorial for him. You know, they've already had a teacher and a student die, though, so maybe it was a scene that ended up getting cut or something. I definitely, you know, presumed he was dead. And we obviously know that he's not the main dude because we hear him kind of pleading with whoever the main dude is. It's interesting that they've started to suspect Harris, though, because, I mean, he is always involved, and I just wonder how much Styles knows about that, like, about how much he's been always been involved with everyone, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. So then it sort of goes into who he actually does think are the top three suspects. And he says Cora and Deaton pretty quickly because he doesn't trust them. Cora is Derek's sister, and she's obviously been away and kind of with Deucalion for a while. He doesn't trust Deaton. He doesn't like, you know, his whole guru type of vibe that he has going on there. And then he says Lydia because things like this have happened before, and Lydia has been a little bit crazy recently. So, I don't know. Out of those three, who do you guys think has the most potential, or you know what, maybe even not those three, who do you guys suspect could be the Drock?
First of all, I agree with Styles about Deaton. I don't like his creepy Obi-Wan vibe either. I don't like that he's so soft-spoken and, like, mentor-y. He's not matter-of-fact enough for me, and I don't, in my heart, think that he's a bad guy, but I don't like the way he comes across a lot of the time. And I, you know, he's too mellow and I don't like it. and look, I don't know. There's clearly something going on with Lydia, but, you know, and he clearly hates, you know, himself for having to recognize that. And I don't know. We know that I don't like Cora very much. But again, I don't know if, you know, she's evil or if she's just a brat. Lydia, something's going on with Lydia, and I don't necessarily think that she's being influenced by the killer, but something is going on with her in regards to dead people. I just don't know if she is a tool of someone or if it is sort of something unrelated, but because of what's going on, if it's not actually the Dirac and it's just her apparent natural sleeper agent powers coming into play, because there are a few theories going around about her which will come in later. I do wonder about Morel, you know, I do wonder about Gerard, and after this episode I seriously wonder about Miss Blake. I 100% now do not trust Miss Blake after this episode.
No.
Yep. None of that felt right. There's too much good theories about it. None of that. It felt so suspicious to me. And we'll get into it as we go by and we can fight about it. But anyway, what did you think, Sarah?
I'm not sure about Deaton, about where I sort of think of him. Lydia, yeah, there's something definitely going on with her, but I don't think it's anything to do with the Drac or she's directly connected. Cora, the same. I don't think any of the people Styles listed are the Drac, but Cora, I definitely think she is in with Derek as a sort of, like you said, sleeper agent. I think both times the Alpha Pack have confronted Derek, they've used Cora as leverage over him. And I don't think that that's an accident that she's been used as leverage over him.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Cora, I don't think it's as simple as it seems. And I think Peter is probably going to be the one to figure it out, so that she'll be interesting. And I bet that Derek's not going to trust him about it.
Yeah, probably not, given their history. I like Deaton. I really don't want him to be a bad guy. Cora and Lydia, I mean, yeah, things are kind of weird with both of them on sort of different points, but I don't think that they're behind this whole thing. Morale is definitely somebody that I have my eye on, but I sort of wonder if we don't know who the Drac is, like if it isn't a character that we are aware of, just because, I don't know, everyone sort of doesn't really seem to be that evil. Of course, you know, they could just be really good actors. There's nobody that really sticks out to me as being like somebody that's really kind of in on this and might have, you know, a stake in what's going on other than Harris. But we, like you said, we know that he's not. He's been suspicious from the beginning, but we know that he's not the one doing this because obviously the Drac killed him. So that's really interesting. I basically have no idea what's going on.
What if it's Coach?
There are some people wondering if it's him. And I said, you know what? That would be a really good twist.
Yeah, I mean, surely he wouldn't be so obvious about, like, letting the wolfsbane leak out of his whistle onto his shirt, causing people to notice it and then figure out what was going on if it was actually him. But maybe it's Greenberg. Can you imagine, though? Oh my god, it would be so good if it was Greenberg. It'd be like that Buffy episode about the girl who goes invisible because no one notices her. And if it was like, oh, and it was just turned around, it's like, no one ever treats me right and blah, blah, and I've known about everything and Coach doesn't love me and like it's, yeah, okay, it's Greenberg, that's it, sold, season done, we're done here, bye.
End of episode.
Anyway, go on. So, yeah, the next bit of this scene, this was the scene that Dylan wrote between him and Tyler Posey, between him, Styles and Scott. So what did you think of it as the writing, like as the scene?
I thought it was very naturally Styles. Like, he obviously knows his character inside and out. You couldn't really tell unless you previously knew that that was the scene, that was what he had written.
Yeah, actually, I did notice, not like, oh, it stood out, but I noticed in a good way. The whole back and forth about, like, Star Wars, what you still haven't seen. Number one, can I just say I love that Scott is 17 years old and a boy and hasn't seen Star Wars, because I'm just going to say this, and it might, like, lose us a bunch of listeners. I hate Star Wars. I freaking hate it. I think it's the most overrated piece of cinema in history. I think everyone's attachment to it is nostalgia, that it's very bad quality, and that if you grew up in a bubble, having never heard of Star Wars, but being exposed to all of the other media that we have, and then we're sat down and you're like this, and we're told this is the seminal movie of space, of a generation, I watch it, you'd watch it and go, really, this? But because of the nostalgia surrounding it, because of what it meant when it came out, everyone's affection for it is subjective, and I just think it's so bad. So I love that Scott hasn't seen Star Wars. The end. Sorry.
I haven't seen Star Wars either.
You and Scott can see. Maybe you should watch it and get back to me on whether you objectively think it's any good, because it's just very badly written and very badly acted, and people are like, that doesn't matter, and I'm like, it matters. Like, people who like it admit that it's badly written and badly acted, so that's just a problem. Anyway, I love how Styles is just like, the way he delivers that line, like, oh, it drives me crazy that when Scott's like, you know, about Scott never having seen it, that little aside, they're like, it just drives me crazy, struck me as like such a naturally delivered line, like such a, not unscripted, but sometimes a delivery really stands out to you as, like, the way people talk in real life. Because a TV show, no matter how good the writing is never really how people talk in real life, because they have to make certain points in certain ways. They have to tell the audience things that they aren't necessarily, you know, that, say, if Carrot and I were having a conversation, or me and my housemate were having a conversation, we wouldn't need to spell everything out in certain ways or reference things because we'd know what the other was talking about. And because of that little casual back and forth about Star Wars, the way that he said that just seemed like such a real conversation.
I wonder if one of the cast hasn't seen Star Wars and it's like an in-joke.
Oh, I would love that.
Hasn't Tyler Posey not seen Star Wars? I'm pretty sure he hasn't.
Oh,
that's why I put that in here, because I figured it was like kind of an actual thing between Dylan and Tyler.
Oh, I hope that's... I'm going to look that up. I'm really hope that's true. Hang on. I'm literally Googling it. Yeah. Apparently, as of, like, an article from WonderCon in March this year, yeah, Tyler Posey has never seen the Star Wars movies. So, yeah. Oh, yeah, it says... Yeah, from the Q&A, Tyler has never seen Star Wars, and that makes it into an episode, so that would be this. Yeah, that's amazing. No, I did not know that, and that's that's amazing.
So then the last sort of part of this scene that I really liked was that Stiles totally calls out Scott on suspecting Matt. I mean, Stiles suspected Matt from the beginning, and he was like, hello, you know, I totally called that, like, way from the beginning. And it was just so funny seeing him get up in arms about that, and Scott sort of being like, well, we didn't think it was him, and Stiles was like, yeah, I did.
To be fair, I mean, if he really thought it was Matt, they didn't do much. All he did there was sit there and be like, I think Matt's evil. And it was kind of seemed like a joke. So if he really suspected Matt, perhaps he should have done more about it at the time. But I guess he won't. I guess he's learned from those mistakes, and now he suspects everyone at everything.
Yeah. In the next scene, we sort of transition over to Miss Blake and Derek. And this sort of kind of cuts in and out as we go through the episode. So when they first are shown here, my question is, you know, Miss Blake saves Derek, brings him to his loft, and he sort of like collapses on the floor. He's really badly hurt. What in the world does she think is going on? I mean, obviously she saw the werewolves, but nobody's actually talked to her about what's going on. And I can't imagine her not being like terrified out of her mind right now.
She's far too calm for her own good about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably something that you're going to get to later.
There's something isn't right here, Karen. I'm really sorry. It's something shady. I mean, it could just be that, like, there's this, you know, intriguing guy that helped her. She doesn't know what's going on. She doesn't want to go too deep into it. But this guy who helped her and who's very kind of enigmatic and silent and all of that shows up needing help. And I guess you just sort of help him no matter what. You're just kind of like, I'm going to help you. Like, you're bleeding. Like, it's only kind of later that she realizes it's, you know, a bit dodgy. But I guess in those circumstances, you're like, someone that you don't wish death upon falls on top of you bleeding and dying. If you're a good human being, you help them. The end. So it could be that, but that being said, I had no particular suspicion of her before, and I definitely had no dislike of her, but the way this episode progressed, it was not right. Something was not right, and there were a few triggery bits for me, and then I was just like, no, she's not what she seems, and I don't think that she's a positive thing here. So we shall see, but yeah.
I agree with you, but I really don't want you to be right.
No, neither.
Her Derek has been through so much and made so much progress, and this is just going to throw him back.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and I don't want this to be a thing. But I just, as I said, It wasn't something that I was like, ooh, I want to hate her. I want to find a reason to hate her. Ooh, I think she might be a suspect. No, it just came from what I was shown. I wasn't thinking about it all, and it came from what I was shown. So I'm a bit worried about that now. Sorry. Sorry. What do you think, then?
I don't know. Actually, I will get into it a little bit later when we see the magic healing thing, but
be good. She may be a force for good. However, I don't think that she is what she seems. Sorry, gone.
Like, just regular person.
I don't think that she's, like, naive to what's going on. She may be, you know, trying to help Derek in her own way or whatever, but I don't think that she's naive to what's going on.
Okay, moving into the next scene here, this is actually kind of set throughout the episode. We get them in parts and pieces, but we're sort of just going to go through them one by one since they all kind of fall under the same category here. But basically, Lydia starts hearing people killing themselves. First, she hears the couple who shoot themselves, and she hears the baby crying. The mother is drowning it. And it's interesting because the others hear dead people, Boyd, Isaac, but only the ones that they're associated with. However, Lydia hears people that she isn't related to, she has no connection to. So that was, I think, a pretty big clue into what she could be.
Yeah, we got a tweet from this. I mean, I put it in the feedback section, but I'll actually bring it up now instead. From Leah Rao, one of our listeners. And she said, I think this episode is solid proof that whatever Lydia is, she's connected to spirits / ghosts / dead people. There's been a lot of meta about what she could be, people are like, oh, is she a banshee, is she a necromancer, and stuff like that. I mentioned this to Jonathan earlier tonight, our guest host, whatever episode he was on, I don't remember, and I was like, do any of your theories about Lydia involve hearing dead people, ghosts, or echoes of past dead people? And he says Hecate was responsible for leading the ghosts of the dead to the upper world each night. She's a goddess of the dead. And he reckons that Lydia is some sort of avatar of Hecate, the goddess, or some sort of, like, mythology surrounding that. On Wikipedia, it says, like, that she's a crossroads god. And basically, a lot of the stuff ties into the idea as well of the tree that she was drawing and the tree that's in the credits and the hand that's reaching down in the credits to all of the hands that are coming up from below, if you know what I mean. It seems like someone is pulling in some way from the underworld. And I think that that is what is potentially going on with Lydia.
I am so on board with this. That sounds amazing, actually.
I saw a massive thing about the, about like symbology in the opening credits and how it might tie into what Lydia is. Shrines to Hecate were placed at doorways in homes and cities with the belief it would protect from the restless dead. So I don't think that what Lydia is, I don't think that she's necessarily anything negative. I think that she might be some sort of like ghost whisperer, like, or something like that. Like someone to help the ghosts or the dead.
Okay, so from this point, we get the different werewolves seeing different things. We start off with Boyd, and apparently Boyd's sister died, and he witnessed it. I think she was ice skating, and she fell under the water and died that way. So what did you guys think about, first of all, him discovering his sister? I mean, it was just a hallucination, but in the ice chest, and then, you know, the creepy thing with the alarm clock and all of that.
Extremely unpleasant.
Yeah, it felt like a horror movie to me.
I mean,
it was
the whole
really well done.
Kind of did.
I was waiting to get more backstory on it, but the episode was very sort of disjointed with what it gave us as regard to each person's story.
Yeah, I mean, I was even a bit confused as to whether his sister died or just disappeared. I mean, they said, you know, that the story was like she was there in lots of people and then she wasn't there anymore. You know, they didn't mention her falling under the ice. I mean, that was my kind of presumption. But the fact that she was like, is she dead? Is it my fault? Did she get kidnapped? Like, is she missing? Like, is she a disappearance? Did they think that she fell under the ice but never found her body? Like, I was actually really confused as to what was confirmed to have happened.
Yeah, they didn't go into specifics. I kind of just assumed that she did actually fall under the ice and die, but you're right, maybe they didn't find her body, and so I guess they wouldn't really know 100% if she was alive or not.
Well, I mean, people always wanted more backstory on Boyd's family, and I wonder if they're sorry now. I think that there was something said in a Q&A a long time ago, like someone said something about Boyd, and Jeff said, like, oh, he had sisters, and someone was like, had, and was all, and then Jeff was all like, ha 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 ha, so maybe he still has a sister, and, you know, not plural sisters, so that's distressing. But hearing him as a kid being interviewed, that was pretty, you know, he sounded like he was very young, and him being like, you know, like, I didn't want to skate anymore, like, in all of that, it was just, yeah, it was just really awful. And the fact that he works at the ice skating rink now, like, did that, what is that, like, that, what is that kind of, like, no wonder him and Derek get along with their, like, self-flagellation, like, what the hell, like, that's just not okay. And, like, I wonder how much, he was always, like, I just wanted to have friends, you know, and I just want to, you know, no one sits with me at lunch, and then I only had one friend. But, like, why on earth does he, you know, it almost seems like his isolation is on purpose, even though he says that he doesn't want it, like, as a self-punishment. So what he's got, like, he's clearly very troubled.
I literally didn't make the connection with him working at an ice rink until you just said it.
That's me nasty. Either. That's nasty.
Ugh.
I wonder if he feels okay, sort of, well, because he feels responsible, he wants to work and, I don't know, make sure it's safe for so that it doesn't happen again.
I guess. I mean, it just, or maybe, you know, just to keep reminding himself or something messed up, like, God, everyone on this show is so messed up. Oh, my God. It's just a stupid show about teenage werewolves. Yeah, right, okay. Anyway, sorry. I'm, like, violently clipping a nail clipper right now. Not on my fingernails, just, like, in the air, like, out of frustration. So, yeah, you know, hopefully we'll see more about that at some point, about what the hell's going on with Boyd, because we don't really know still, except that he now has this horrible past, just like everyone else in this show.
Yeah. Speaking of characters with horrible pasts, I don't know about you guys, but the part with Isaac got to me the most because it was so scary how he was just talking out loud like his father was there, and then he was kind of saying like what his father was saying to him, and the way that they did the cut shots and the way that, I mean, Daniel Sharman like portrayed Isaac, he just looked absolutely crazy and terrified, and that was really hard for me to watch.
Yeah, it was the worst, except for like Stiles and Scott at the end. To me, that bit was definitely the worst, even though Isaac didn't try to kill himself. Like, he wasn't the one that actually, I mean, he may have been going to, but we didn't see him actually try to kill himself compared to everyone else. The way that he acted in that scene was just, it really messed with me, actually. I found it very distressing. And, I mean, that's, like, kind of as well backstory as to, like, why he got put in the freezer. Like, they were trying to fix the freezer, and because he handed the wrong wrench, he was, like, and he was like, I'm going to have to use chains to, close it now. And, you know, that's why he, and, you know, that's a suitable punishment for handing the wrong wrench, apparently. Like, what does that to a person? Like, what makes someone like that, like the father? I just can't even imagine it. But, yeah, the way that he was sort of responding that and, like, reciting the conversation was, awful.
And his face when Lydia finds him later is just so horrible, the way he recoils from her.
Yeah. I've always thought, I actually wrote this down as well, like, even though I don't think that Isaac is, as we've discussed before, I don't think that he's, like, this soppy, weak character, like, as a human being. I think he's, like, really sassy and funny. I do think that he's the least dominant out of all of the werewolves that we've seen. Like, I think that he's someone that would never become an alpha, that he is incredibly submissive, and that he is, you know, someone that sort of wants, you know, wants to be, you know, loved and looked after by whoever will do it, like his, you know, whichever alpha, you know, will have him, if it's Derek or Scott or whatever, and that he's always the one that responds the most to sort of an alpha's command, like Derek again or Scott in the last few episodes. So, and I think that, you know, his responses to things as well, like this, like hiding under the bed and all of that are also very submissive. And it's, you know, I just want to know if that's actually like a part of his personality or if that's like sort of a trauma thing still because of his father.
He also must be quite a strong individual, though, because he's the only one that didn't try to kill himself.
Yeah, so because and that's where I get confused, like, about which one, like, about what's in his head, basically, yeah.
I wonder, though, if, I mean, okay, so we know the Duroc had some hand in what was going on during this, and I think that he was the one that was inside of their heads trying to get them to kill themselves, so I'm wondering if Isaac, like you were saying, Natalie, he's the one least able, I guess would be the right word, I don't know, to become an alpha, or the least likely to become an alpha. And I think he's the least threatening, so he didn't try to kill himself because the Duroc maybe didn't see him as a threat and was focusing on the other three.
Maybe, or the other big thing that I think that guided the other three's hand more than anything was guilt, and I don't know if Isaac has the guilt that would have driven him right. The same way. Because, obviously, Boyd's was guilt about his sister. And then we can get into Scott as well, who basically hallucinates the conversation with Deucalion, you know, saying that he's becoming an alpha now, and that so Deucalion's coming after him, and that Deucalion kills Scott's mother in front of him, and all of that kind of thing. One thing about Scott apparently becoming the alpha, that conversation sort of implied that if Derek is dead, his alpha line would pass to Scott, which is interesting. Maybe that's right. Like, maybe seeing as Peter bit Scott and then Derek became an alpha from Peter, maybe Scott would be the next in line, but, you know, so much for Scott claiming that he's not part of that pack. But basically he was saying, oh, I'm not the alpha. Like, I might not be the alpha. Derek might not be dead. Just to clarify this for everyone, because I had someone comment last week, when I was saying, oh, you know, surely the surefire sign for Derek being dead would be one of the others become an alpha, I didn't mean, and someone was like, oh, but the person who killed him was already an alpha. I don't mean like that. I mean that surely if an alpha dies naturally, like if an alpha dies because they fall off a cliff or of old age or something like that, that the next person in their pack in line becomes an alpha, like that it doesn't necessarily have to be like, you know, from a violent killing from another pack and taking over. Like if an alpha line is going to pass down naturally and somewhat, you know, non-confrontationally, it would just be like it would go to someone else in the pack if their alpha was killed by, you know, another alpha or by a natural cause. And so that's what I meant, because Derek died, quote unquote, by falling off a, you know, mall. He didn't die by actually someone slitting his throat or something. So I thought that someone would become an alpha naturally that way. And from this conversation, it seems to imply that they would and that it would be Scott. Did you get that?
Yeah, I think it is kind of strange that Scott would maybe be the next in line just because he has always said he's not part of the pack and that sort of thing. But and we don't really know how the whole alpha thing works, like if there's this some innate sense of who would be the best leader or something like that. So I'm not really sure. It's definitely a question that I hope is going to be answered later on.
Yeah.
We saw Scott's eyes turn in the last episode, but I was just wondering whether or not when he looks in the mirror and sees his eyes red this episode, whether if that was part of the Wolfsbane or if that was he is an alpha now or...
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't tell whether that was a hallucination or if that was real.
I kind of have a theory that maybe what's so special about Scott is that he can turn it on and off.
What, being an alpha, or...?
Yeah, because he in the last episode, his eyes went red, and then he sort of caught himself, and they were yellow again.
Pushed it away, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something he doesn't want, and so is trying to potentially, you know, not be it if possible, but at the moment I'm still really confused by it.
Did we talk enough about Scott seeing his mom? Do you want to just jump to Ethan?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously the scene with Scott's mother, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. It's, you know, a thing that he hopes won't happen. But Ethan, now Ethan really interested me because, to me, what it felt like, that whole scene, I mean, the scene with Danny was really, really cute, but Ethan's whole trauma seems to be based around his brother, like what he hallucinates, or, you know, his morphing starting, his change starting, which seems to be like his spine splitting open so that Aiden can go inside him. Like he's the outside wolf. Like Ethan is the one on the outside and Aiden is the one that goes into him. Ugh, that sounds so gross. and so he kind of feels his spine splitting open. He runs to the bathroom and he kind of sees a face like tearing away inside his stomach. And when he does try and kill himself, he does it by trying to cut into his stomach and then rip with his claws into his stomach, presumably to like cut out whatever. And I just wonder if, to me, that felt very guilt based as well. Like, and I don't know why, like whether it would be that he didn't like being sort of two halves of a whole with his brother, whether he kind of felt too controlled by it, like, and he just wanted to be his own person, or whether something happened to make them like that he regrets or whatever. So what did you guys think about it?
I definitely saw it as more of a regret thing rather than him wanting to be his own person, just because he looked so distressed, and I think it was based off of guilt. But this part really kind of confused me, and somebody else brought up, I think it was on our Twitter, that I think they kind of mentioned in passing that it was something about the betas, and I was wondering, do we know for sure if that was his brother, or if maybe because he had to kill his own betas, maybe he had to absorb them or something? I don't know, that does sound kind
of
gross.
Yeah, I did say someone saying that, yeah, he, you know, he thinks it was one of, like, his betas that him and, you know, Aiden or whatever had to kill, but I don't know if I agree about that, and I'm actually wondering whether the twins ever actually did do that, because they're very young, and you can become an alpha without having a pack, if you know what I mean. So I'm wondering if they ever had betas to kill. But the thing that made me think it was his brother was because it started with the spine-splitting thing. Like, it started with the, like, you know, the thing preparing him for Ethan to morph in him, and then we see, you know, a face in him. So I presumed it was to do with his brother because of that.
Yeah, so did I. So speaking of Ethan still, the scene between Danny and Ethan, there was one line in there that really caught my attention, and I wanted to know what kind of theories you guys had on that. So Danny and Ethan are talking, and Danny tells them about these surgeries that he had, and he said, you know, he doesn't want to get rid of the scars because it makes him feel like a survivor. And Ethan says, I really hope you are, meaning I really hope you are a survivor. So what kind of plans do you think they have for Danny, and do you think that Ethan is doing it out of his own sort of selfish ambitions, or do you think it's kind of this overarching plan that maybe Deucalion has?
I think, well, first of all, he was like, well, what if you could get rid of them? And I'm like, oh my god, you want to make him a werewolf. So there's that. The fact that he has scars kind of makes me, you know, our grand plan that Danny is a werewolf might not be true if he has these scars. And also the fact that he wasn't affected by the wolf's bane. So Danny might not be a werewolf. Sorry, everyone. He's a something. But when the description of the twins first came out, they said, you know, these alpha twins who, you know, said something like that they were going to be placed upon, among Scott's friends, and their mission may not be to attack but to seduce or something. So I think that they were potentially given like the task of getting involved with Scott's friends in some way in order to later be able to use them as like leverage, but that Ethan now actually really likes Danny and does not want to have to use him in this way or get him hurt.
Although he may not want to use him, I think what he said, that he hopes he's a survivor, means that whether or not that's what he wants, Danny is going to end up being used.
Yeah. And then Ethan hopes he gets out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boo that!
I thought it was really interesting, too, that Ethan didn't really seem appreciative once Stiles did save him, because he says, maybe you shouldn't have saved him, like, saved me. And I don't know if that was meant... Maybe I'm just looking, like, way into this, but it seemed like he doesn't really like what's going on. He doesn't like using Danny. He doesn't like the situation that he's in. Did you guys pick up on that at all?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know who would have gained if no one had saved Ethan, if you know what I mean. I loved the way that when they did save Ethan, by the way, I loved the way that they just sort of busted into the room and, you know, Stiles was like, Ethan, no, like without second thought, you know, even though he's literally their enemy. Like, and yeah, like I don't know why, you know, Ethan would say that, like would say, you know, maybe it would have been better if you didn't. Like, does he just not want to be a part of it that much that they should have let him die? And if he doesn't want to be a part of it that much, what does Deucalion have on him or his brother that could make him just not leave, if you know what I mean?
Oh, that's a good theory, that maybe he doesn't really want to be there, but Deucalion's sort of forcing his hand. So, you know, we see Stiles saving Ethan, and then we see Stiles and Lydia working together to save Boyd because he's drowning himself in the bathtub with this, like, giant safe. That was really scary. And I loved seeing Stiles and Lydia working together, especially since they're the humans, you know, and they don't have the superpowers, but they have their intelligence, and they find a way to save not only Boyd, but Isaac, too, who's hiding under the bed. And it's just such a far cry from season one, where Lydia wouldn't even look at Stiles, and now they're just so close, and they just understand each other. And I love the arc that that relationship has gone from season one to season three.
One thing I loved as well was Stiles also... You know how I said, like, the other week that, like, Stiles is really open with Lydia, like, to a point that you're not usually with someone with your fancy or whatever? He also must have had an extreme amount of guts to actually say to her face, look, I think you might be killing people. Like, and to have them continue to, you know, she kind of storms off, but then they go to, you know, obviously help Boyd after that. And it's just... Again, it's like the bit with her and Allison kind of saying, it's okay, I believe you. These kind of things are just, like, taken as given now, almost. I mean, obviously, if Lydia is involved against her will, you know, she's going to want to find out about it. But it just made me think, like, the fact that he can, like, go up and say that to her is also very representative of their relationship now. One other thing about Lydia very quickly was when she was... with Allison and seeing, you know, hearing the voices and then starting to see the faces in the wood on the wall, the only thing that made me think of was, like, I don't know if there's any connection to, like, wood and the trees, you know, that she was drawing and the tree in the opening credit, but Jeff did say that, like, comparing the tree that she was drawing and the tree in the opening credit was, like, people paying attention to the right details. So it just made me wonder if wood and, you know, if anything to do with wood and trees could be traced in regards to what might be going on with Lydia as well, if there's anything that ties into death. The yew tree, which represents death, is apparently, again, one of the symbols of the Hecate goddess I mentioned before, so don't know where that's going to go.
I saw a picture on Tumblr that someone had found a face in a light bulb. Did any of you see that picture?
Yeah.
Where was that?
It was during the ice bath scene when the camera kind of focused on the light as it was kind of going in and out, I think. And it does sort of look like a face, but I don't know. I don't know.
I see the picture. I don't know if it's on purpose either, but...
Yeah. Ugh. I think it's interesting, and I wouldn't put it past Jeff to put in things like that, but, yeah, I'm not sure. What I found more interesting, actually, was, like you were saying, is all the connection with the wood. And Lydia stares at the wood paneling in one of the rooms, and we see faces in the wood, and she very clearly is staring at it, and it was really disappointing, actually, because it kind of just cut away and then we don't see anything else about it. But I think that was definitely a clue of some sort as well.
Yeah, that's what I reckon about the tree. It could be connected to the whole, tree, wood, druid thing in some way. I do not know what at this point, but if anyone knows any connection between certain types of wood and druids and death or ghost whisperers, you know, hit us up.
What do you think about the face in the light bulb, Sarah?
I'm not sure about the light bulb, but I flick back to the, because it's in the same picture or same post on Tumblr as the faces on the wood, and the faces on the wood all seem to be screaming, which sort of links into Lydia's, that her scream is important, and that she seems to wake up screaming.
Yeah. Oh, Lydia. What are you, Lydia?
Everybody on this show is so damaged.
Speaking of damaged people.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Can I just say, him saying, like, when she's all like, oh, I have a feeling about you, and he's like, what does he say? Like, it shouldn't be a good one or something. Like, you know, any feeling you have about me shouldn't be good. Like, does he really think this way about himself? Like how self-punishy is that?
Yeah.
But that being said, the thing that opened the bit that opened that scene that really made me suspect her was he was like, oh, I have to tell Scott and the others I'm alive. You know, the others think I'm dead. And she goes, maybe that's a good thing. And then she kind of goes in to be like, oh, you know, having a fake death, you know, is, you know, famous literary device and whatever. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I get that you're an English teacher, but who says that off the bat? Or like, who says that? Who's like, you know, oh, people think I'm dead, and who's going to make a hilarious joke being like, maybe that's a good thing? To me, the way that she said it, and then she kind of went into talking about it, the way that she said it was the first thing that I was like, that sounded wrong. And I seriously questioned this. Like, I'm wondering, maybe she's there to keep Derek away, like to tempt Derek away in some way. Maybe it's like for his own protection. Maybe she's some sort of like fairy that secretly loves him and is trying to like keep him safe. But who says that? Who says maybe that's a good thing about him, people thinking he's dead?
Well, she is emotionally damaged. I mean, she's in therapy, so maybe that's her coping mechanism.
Maybe she has a really black sense of humor and like she just say that off the bat. I don't know. Maybe she would. Maybe she would. But I was very like, yeah, I was very like, the way you said that was not normal, and I do not know what is going on with you.
Yeah, there's definitely something up with Miss Blake.
Yeah, considering that when she was kissing Derek, his wounds healed instantly. So yeah. That was interesting.
Yeah,
power of love, or maybe just testosterone.
That whole thing, I mean, I wasn't sure whether that was, like, her specifically. Like, you know, number one, we didn't see her react to that at all. But number two, you know, maybe he was not reeling for... Maybe he was not healing for the same reasons as Scott, like, some sort of mental thing, and that, like, now that he believes that something in this world is good and that he has, like, a reason to go on, that he starts, like, healing, that it kickstarts the healing. Because before that he was all like, oh, there's no point. And I'm wondering if she's there to get him like so doped up on love that he's like useless as a werewolf, if you know what I mean, and that we're gonna see him being like totally cheesy and hilarious.
Oh, Siren, this would be a good plot point for Sirens.
Yeah. You're like, please, yes.
Please.
I mean, it also, you know, it was interesting, and I mean, someone brought this up as well on Twitter, But, you know, in Scott's speech, which, you know, is a really big point that we'll talk about in 1 second, but the one that we quoted, you know, Scott saying, oh, there's no hope, and he's like, not for me, not for Derek. And literally when he said not for Derek, it cut to him and Miss Blake kind of hooking up. And there was kind of an argument, not an argument, but a kind of like, was that foreshadowing or was that irony, if you know what I mean? Was that saying, actually, there is hope for Derek because he's hooking up with a hot lady? Or was it foreshadowing that what was going on with Derek right now is actually a bad thing?
He looked like he was getting plenty of hope.
That's what the kids are calling it these days. So, yeah, that was, like, what did you reckon about that sort of cutaway, Karen?
I don't think it was irony. I definitely think it was on purpose. And, yeah, I have a really bad feeling that Miss Blake isn't going to last very long. I really want her to. I like her, but I think, you know, we know how much Jeff likes to torture his characters, and considering how, like you guys were saying, that Derek is, you know, maybe he was trying to, maybe the love that he felt or just being with Miss Blake, seeing this positive thing made him heal faster, and then, you know, that's just going to be ripped away from him, and it's something else that he's going to have to deal with.
I mean,
we saw in the last episode that whenever Allison had to stitch up Scott, that the healing process has something to do with how their minds are.
Yeah. So, that, you know, turnaround of, you know, actually feeling happy, you know, it's, you know, actually helped him. But, you know, I'm still curious about whether she's, in some way it's helped in this situation, but I'm curious as to what the deal is. The big thing that someone has asked us to talk about was, let me read this again. This is someone's Tumblr post. The person who came up with it was, I think their username is Feel Avalanche. She said, or he said, let me just say again that until another character actually witnesses Derek and Jennifer interacting, I'm going to be very suspicious of their relationship. I'm not saying she's the Darak or even a bad guy at all. I'm just saying I think someone or something is manipulating Derek's mind. In all four scenes, and I'm counting the entirety of the time in their life, just one scene, between Derek and Jennifer, they've been joined or even seen by another character zero times. And they've said, and as the sheriff always says, and then they've got images of each interaction. So the first one where he saves her, the second one in the school, the third one at her car, and the fourth time in the loft. One's an incident, two's a coincidence, three's a pattern, and four's enough for a warrant. And just a reminder, this isn't the first time we've had a romance between two characters that no one else ever witnessed, and that was Lydia and young Peter. I'm assuming we all remember how that one turned out. And Stiles even says in this episode, everything we're going through, we've been through something like this before, you know, with hallucinating at Lydia's party. And she said, and I can't help but wonder that the fact that the Derek and Jennifer macking happened in the same episode in which every werewolf in the episode suffered from hallucinations.
I think this is a really interesting theory, and you can't deny that the evidence is definitely there. However, the only thing that really stands out to me is that we know Jennifer is real. I mean, Peter.
Yeah, she's a teacher.
Young
yeah,
Peter.
They've
right,
had her in the
exactly.
class. Like, Scott and that have had her in the class, but I don't necessarily think she's a hallucination, but I am curious about their interactions and whether she is what she seems.
Yeah. I don't want to believe it, but there you go.
It's not looking good for Miss Blake.
Yeah, I was not going in thinking this stuff, and it just, I'm just, yeah, just something about everything that happened in this episode, I was just like, you know, surely a good and responsible lady wouldn't be, you know, getting a very injured man to have sex with her as well. Like, if you know, if that was me, I'd be like, probs don't, honey. Like, probs just wait a bit. Like, but you know, she might not be bad. She might be trying to protect him in some way, but we shall see.
How many words have they actually spoken to each other?
Not very many.
It's like, that's just, yep, let's go there.
Oh, well. Anyway, I mean, I guess the big next thing after those guys and Lydia and Stiles saving Isaac and Boyd is that they sort of go out to look after Scott as well, to, you know, to kind of give Scott the same treatment and find that he's already sort of a step ahead of them and has covered himself with gasoline and got the flare ready, basically, and is going to set the gasoline on fire and try to kill himself as well. And that's, you know, the time that he has kind of the speech about there being no hope and that, you know, everything, you know, about his life now is basically going downhill. And he sort of asked Styles if he remembers when, before he got the bite, you know, that they were, you know, not popular or, you know, good at lacrosse or not important in any way, and, you know, that they were nothing, and that maybe it would be better if he was nothing again, so that it would be just better for everyone around him, because clearly being something isn't working out for them. Yeah, did you guys sort of see this coming? I mean, I know that it was suspected, actually, there was a big thing that one of our followers actually theorized that there was a still of him covered in, you know, the dripping liquid, and the others, the fact that the others were dry, and someone actually suspected that it might be gasoline, that he might be trying to kill himself. So were you guys sort of expecting this?
Yeah, I was expecting it. I had seen all that same post on Tumblr and was like, yeah, that's what's going to happen.
I don't really know if I really saw it coming. I had a feeling that maybe, I mean, considering that considering that Boyd and Ethan both tried to kill themselves, I guess it wasn't too much of a stretch to see Scott do the same thing. However, what I was really wondering, and he kind of, you know, Styles asks him this and he kind of responds with, well, you know, what if this is just me? Was he really under the power of the Wolfsbane, or was this him actually not wanting to live anymore?
The bit that when he said, what he said, what if this is just me, I don't think that any of the people, I basically don't think that any of the people who tried to kill themselves I think they were under the influence of the Wolfsbane, but I don't think that they were having any thoughts that they wouldn't have had before. They were just unable to find anything to fight with against it.
So yeah, maybe they were amplified the thoughts.
So I think that yes, it's his thoughts, and I think that yes, Boyd probably has enough guilt to want to die about like losing his sister, and that whatever Ethan's issue is clearly driving him pretty mad as well. But that they're all people who, at the end of the day, aren't clinically depressed and are able to keep going and push that stuff aside and have other things to live for, or responsibilities, or, you know, good feelings. And that this was tapping into the bad parts of them enough to not give them anything to fight with, and to, yeah, as you said, amplify it and make it worse, but that it's not something that he potentially wouldn't have thought anyway.
The thing I want to know is, if the flares snapped Boyd and Isaac out of their whatever they were in, how did Scott light his flare without snapping himself out of the Wolfsbane hallucination?
That's a good point. I mean, it could be that, like, they have to actually get burnt with it, like, touch it to this, you know, touch the hot part onto them to, like, jolt them with it. Or it could be that he was going to do it because of the Wolfsbane, lit the flare when he realized, and it brought him out of it, but when he was in the situation he was in, he still felt that way. Like what Karen just said, that it could, yeah, that his real feelings were still there.
Well, that's so much worse now.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's depressing.
Sorry. This episode was rough, man. It was rough.
Oh, yeah.
It was, I will just say this as well, like the whole, because it's being said everywhere, but it's true. Scott's speech and then Styles' speech sort of retaliating and stepping onto the gasoline with Scott. Number one, that was just the worst thing that's ever been on television in the history of time. And number two, it was very reminiscent, for anyone that's seen Buffy, of the end of season 6 and between Xander and Willow. And when Willow sort of goes dark and crazy and is going to blow up the world because everything is horrible and there's so much pain, and she's basically going to destroy the world, and Xander talks her down out of it. And a lot of people sort of call it the yellow crayon bit, because he's talking about, like, the first time he met her as a kid and that she, like, yeah, stole his yellow crayon, or, you know, in preschool or something like that. And it's so similar. And not in a bad way, not in, like, a rip-off kind of way, but it's such a similar kind of moment between them in a way that you don't see too much on TV, like, anymore. Like seeing it made me realize that since I saw that in Buffy, that I haven't seen another show handle it. It's always like the love. It's always like someone's like, they're talked down off the ledge by the great love or whatever. It's never the friend, and that might be more important. And yeah, so that really stuck with me.
So to move on to something slightly less depressing, I have a question, and maybe I was just looking too closely at this, but did anyone else notice how Lydia pretty much, when the flare got moved into the gasoline, and she screams out no, and she goes to save everybody, she kind of saves Stiles, who, yeah. I mean, she jumps on Stiles, who kind of saves Scott, and Allison's just kind of left to kind of, you know, fall over on her own. So did anyone else notice that too?
I did, and I noticed.
I noticed that Allison didn't jump to save anybody. I noticed she just jumped for herself.
I didn't. I sort of didn't notice that Allison didn't, unless she felt like there was literally nothing that she could do in the circumstance. But Lydia, I don't know if it's just because the angle that she was standing was closer to Stiles, like that she was the one. That he was the one that she knocked into. But I would definitely, like, at this point, like, if we're going to talk about, like, a hierarchy of, like, people Lydia cares about in the world, I think Stiles is higher on it than Scott, for sure. Like, yeah. For absolute sure. Scott is kind of their leader or whatever, but Stiles has become her actual friend. She knows that Stiles cares about her and has been there for her, and, you know, she's danced with him. She knows he gets her. You know, they've gone on kind of friend dates. You know, she knows how much he cares about her, and, you know, they spend time together, and Stiles is close to her now. So I think she'd care more about losing Stiles.
What about Allison, though? Because they are best friends. Do you think that their relationship is kind of falling by the wayside because of everything that's going on and what Allison did last season?
You mean Lydia and Allison? Yeah. I mean, I don't think so. I mean, at this point, I think that her and Allison seem okay, but do you mean, like, her knocking Stiles instead of Allison? Like, because I don't know if Allison was in as much danger as Stiles was at that moment.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility, but you're talking about the hierarchy of, the friendships. Do you think that Allison's higher than Stiles, or is Stiles higher than Allison?
I think that subconsciously Stiles might be higher than Allison. I don't know. Like, did you notice that it was, like, Lydia that texted Stiles, not Allison, when she was like, come and talk, just, you know, she texted him instead of Allison, you know, I need to talk to you, just you. But I think that consciously it's like, oh, yeah, Allison's my best friend, you know, whatever. But I think that Stiles has never, like, I think if she sat down there and thought about the people that love her and care about her, that objectively she would work out that Stiles was the best person in her life, pretty much. But I don't know if she actually is at that point emotionally. Like, if she, you know, does love Allison and cares about Allison, or whether she, you know, realizes Allison went crazy cakes and holds it against her or whatever. So I don't know at this point, but she definitely obviously cares about Stiles.
I don't know if she would have had the sort of time to...
Yeah.
Put everybody in a hierarchy.
Yeah, totally.
I think Stiles must have been the closest to her, and it was just get them down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, right after that, you know, she's kind of on top of Stiles, and she turns back, and she looks at the flames right in front of the bus, and she sees the Drock in the flames. Was anyone else, like, completely terrified by what this thing looked like?
It's the creepiest face I have ever seen in any sort of horror movie or anything. It was awful.
It also definitely, to me, looked female.
Really?
It's very hard to tell, but it looked to me kind of like witchy, like a traditional kind of hooked nose witch kind of thing. I felt it was female. I don't know. I vibed it. I'll look at it again, but I don't know. I just thought it when I saw it. I might be totally wrong. It could be anything, honestly. But I feel like when it got to its closest point, I was like, oh, yeah, it kind of looks like a witch, like a storybook.
Yeah, I thought if it was going to look like anybody that we've already seen, it could mostly resemble Deaton. Though I don't think he's anything to do with it. I think that might have just been a coincidence.
I need to look at a screen cap now.
Everybody hits Google.
Oh, God.
So, do you guys think it was an actual face then, or a mask?
Well, it looked all charcoal-y. It looked all like... I don't think it was like a mask, but I don't think it was like the thing's natural face either, if you know what I mean. It could be a mask, but whatever it wasn't made out of like any cheap plastic. It was like all like knobbly and ancient, so I don't know.
Do you have a picture of the thing handy?
I do. It's on the last thing I reblogged on my Tumblr was that GIF set, so I'll paste my link in. Hold on.
Oh God, it's so terrifying.
Can I just say, I love that your Tumblr bio includes Ben Whishaw's life-ruining face.
Oh, I just want to smush him.
I'm glad it's not nighttime, because I'm just staring at this and...
It's nighttime for me!
Yeah.
Thanks.
I don't know if it really looks like a female or not. I can't tell. Maybe it's all scarred and weird.
Maybe I was delusional. I don't know. It looks like a dinosaur or someone who's a face in lava, like in a volcano. Yeah. I don't know. It ain't very natural, whatever it is. Can I just say, I can't believe they got back on the bus the next day. Wasn't the bus singed in the fire at all? Did no one, like, you know how Coach came out and was like, I don't even want to know after they spent the rest of the night on the bus? Like, did anyone notice the giant fireball that went off in the middle of the parking lot? No.
Apparently
I don't
not.
Understand how Coach did Coach not notice stuff. Anything that was going on. Because I have been on school trips and I have been leaders at, like, youth things, and all the responsible adults are constantly on high alert for these kids running around.
Yeah.
Keyword responsible adults, though. I mean, coaches. that's questionable.
Oh, poor Bobby Finstock. But yeah, I'm very curious about that, like about the ugly, scary, horrible face that is there. So, if anyone has any ideas about what the hell that is, please tell us. Do we think that's actually the Durak? That is the guy. That's the bad guy. That's the Durak did this, and that's him or her.
I do, but at the same time, how in the world could he be or she in the middle of this giant fireball? And like, it just appeared and then disappeared with the fireball. So like, is it invisible? But I mean, we know it's not because we've seen its hands before. But we don't have.
Does he have, like, teleportation powers or something? Like, that he can just zoom into things? Like, I'm a little confused.
The more I look at this GIF over and over, the more I kind of think the face is the same shape as Gerard's.
Yeah, it's sort of round.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, God, speaking of Gerard. Anyway, I guess... Just quickly, when they all leave, before we get to the end, they all get back on the bus. Apparently, didn't matter that the bus was in the middle of a fireball explosion. Them, plus a couple of other randoms up the back, spent the rest of the night on the bus. Did anyone else notice that when they got on the bus, that they were like, when Coach got on the bus, it wasn't just those four, that there were other people, like, in the back seat, like some dude I've never seen before. Because, anyway, they all are going home. Ethan sits down next to Scott and was like, look, I don't know what happened. I think you saved my life. And Styles was like, that was me, actually. That was me. And he kind of ignores that. And I was like, nice. But he basically is like, I'm going to give you something. We think Derek's alive. But our question last week about whether the rest of the pack knows that Deucalion killed Ennis is answered in that he says, but the thing is, if he is, he has killed one of ours, so he can eat, like, so basically they think that Derek killed Ennis and that Aiden and Carly's reaction at the end of last episode was just sheer grief from hearing that Ennis died, not anger at Deucalion. They think that Derek killed Ennis, that Derek has the choice to join the Alpha Pack. I don't know why that they'd want him in the Alpha Pack, given that he just killed their friend. Apparently, maybe it's like a rite of like passage, like, you know, maybe you get that status, but I don't know why the hell you would want him around. And to do that, he has to kill his own pack. Or that Carly will come after him and kill him, that they'll hunt him down and kill him. So those options sound awesome, as Styles friendly. He's like, what did you think of sort of Ethan telling Scott this?
I loved it. I'm glad that he sort of has this moral code where he's like, okay, you saved my life. Although, yeah, it was Styles. That was a cheap thing to do. I felt really bad for him. But I'm glad he had that moral code to be like, okay, you saved my life, I'm going to give you some information. And it was a little bit of a heads up, and he was appreciative of it, and I hope that this is just him slowly walking down that path of realizing that he's not in this pack by choice, you know, that he doesn't really want to be there, that there are things outside of the pack that maybe he would rather have. So it's definitely interesting, and I'm glad that, this is going to sound kind of strange, but I'm glad that they didn't know that Deucalion killed Ennis, because I want them to find out instead of turning on Deucalion.
I totally agree with you. That'd work.
There was a quote at that point that almost made it into my top ones, and it was whenever Ethan walks off and Styles shouts after him, you know, your little code of ethics is just sort of barbaric, FYI.
Yeah, I love that he doesn't give a damn. Like, seriously, again, they are shouting this stuff all over public places. Like, what the hell, guys? So that makes me laugh. But, yeah, it's definitely, I feel like, the fact that they don't know about Deucalion doing that and the fact that Ethan's done this, I think there's definitely a lot of room for them to move around here, that there's a lot of room for them to adjust their ideas, if you know what I mean. And then Lydia notices a little sort of smudge below the coach's whistle on his chest, like a little purple sort of shadow, and I sort of saw it just a second before she did. I was kind of like, before she said something, I was like, what the hell is that? And then she pulled the whistle, and I was like, oh, my God. And it turns out that the boys, the werewolves, were influenced by whatever was going on, because the coach's whistle was full of some sort of wolf's bane. So while he'd been blowing it on the bus, they'd been slowly inhaling it and getting poisoned. So does this mean it's just yet another variety of wolf's bane? Because so far we've had one that was like hallucinogenic that, you know, included both Scott and Styles and everyone at the party hallucinating. And that wasn't this one, because only the werewolves were affected. We've had some that simply just sort of weaken them and, you know, end up with them kind of literally suffocating and dying. We've had some that, you know, if you burn it up, it is a healing property. This one, however, only affected the werewolves and made them in some way susceptible to whatever the Darak was doing it, or gave them these hallucinations, or weakened their mind in some way. But what do you reckon about that wolfsbane and what, you know, the other types that we've seen?
It seemed to be very sort of ground down. I mean, we've seen it in its plant form being used before. And Lydia, at the party, whenever she had it in her hand.
Yeah.
No. What was the episode she, like, blew it out of her hand?
That was at the end of that episode, yeah. When she went to Derek after the party.
Yeah, and we've seen it in lots of different forms, but I'm wondering if there are lots of different varieties of the plant, because they really seem to do different things every time.
I think there is, because remember when Victoria wanted to kill Scott? Didn't she say something about, I really like this species or this variation of Wolfsbane?
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely a possibility that maybe it was just a different variation. But also, just to point out that at the party, they all ingested it. They didn't inhale it. They drank it. So I'm wondering if that may have something to do with it, too.
Yeah. I'm still confused as to why it actually affected the humans at the party. But, yeah, I don't know at this point. Besides from that, whoever did it had to have access to Coach's whistle. I mean, unless you want to think that it's actually Coach doing it. So what does that mean? Do you think that it could be Greenberg in that case?
Hey, you never know. But, I think there could have been any number of people who maybe could have gotten to that whistle. I mean, it's just a whistle, unless he, locks it up at his desk every night or something. He has a special protective case for it.
He probably does.
I'm kind of glad the whistle thing was brought back up, because one of the parts of the last episode that I didn't really enjoy the episode as a whole, but one thing that really bugged me was when Coach and Styles were talking and he kept blowing the whistle in his face. I know Coach is obnoxious sometimes, but that was just totally unnecessary. But now this episode we see why we have to see him blowing. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And I just looked up Wolfsbane on the Wikipedia page. There are, hundreds of different species.
Okay.
So
that's interesting.
Yeah, so this is what I'm thinking, that all of these different varieties have, very subtle different uses, and that, one other thing about the Hecate goddess, she's apparently, very tied into herbs and weeds and, magical plants, so maybe Lydia could end up, finding all of the different uses of Wolfsbane and, using them to their advantage in some way.
That would be cool.
I guess the last big point is our big reveal at the end, I suppose.
Yeah, of Gerard. Oh, my God. Did anyone else, was anybody else totally blindsided by the fact that he was back in this episode?
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. And I was pretty surprised that it was, where he was, to Chris, ooh, twice in 1 month. So it wasn't like Chris just tracked him down. Chris has known where he is, maybe even put him there himself. He seems to be in some sort of care facility. And that he's going there to get information and all of that.
Yeah, that really kind of bothered me that Chris knows where Gerard is and is sort of, I don't know if he's keeping him there or keeping an eye on him, but, and I mean, it's obvious that the relationship is kind of strained, but I just really had trouble seeing him talk to Gerard so calmly and being totally fine with the fact that he's still alive, given everything that Gerard did in season 2.
Yeah.
If he's in a care home, he's not in a very good one, because what nurse would let someone have black stuff pour out of their mouth and nose without doing something about it?
Yeah, it's pretty disgusting. The fact that he went there to sort of find more information about the death of, my uncle, presumably that's Gerard's brother, and we find out that Deucalion was the alpha that bit him and caused him to go kill himself. One thing about that suicide is we saw that it was room 217 at the beginning, and then the bit where Allison and Lydia they're in room 217 and get the Bible out and look at all the articles. The fact that they were in room 217 as well, and there was no article in there about his suicide, that Allison didn't notice her own name or family there. I just thought that was a bit lucky and a bit odd that they put them in the same room if they weren't going to have her find out, if you know what I mean.
Was the article about the 28-year-old man about him, or was that somebody else?
It could have been about him, I don't know, but it certainly didn't say his name, if you know what I mean. Maybe articles about suicides don't say the person's name, I don't know, but it could have been about him. Perhaps the story was about him, but obviously they didn't find out, Alison didn't find out that it was, you know, her uncle, her great-uncle or whatever.
Yeah, maybe, you know, they wouldn't put the name in the headline, and maybe the three of them just read the headlines, and that's why she didn't notice.
Mm. Did anyone else also wonder what Chris was doing earlier in the episodes, like why he was trying to sort of trace down what was happening, like, with the Alpha Pack? I mean, is it just because he knew Alison was getting involved, or what? I will say I loved the effects that they sort of used to him looking at the scene and, like, with his training, knowing what kind of movements had transpired. Like, I really enjoyed the use of that effect and the fact that through doing that and finding the arrow marks that he realised that Alison had been there. But in general, what's Chris's end game here? Why has this made him start, you know, suspecting? Why did the suicide thing bring up something for him? Why is this now important? You know, is this a thing that he once knew, like a Deucalion, a name that he once heard, and now that he realizes that he's back, that he's, like, super bad and has to do something about it? Or, like, if he's not going to be involved anymore, what makes this worse than any other, you know, what makes this worse than any other situation just because his uncle killed himself in 1977? Like, do you think it's a family vengeance thing? Because, like, Peter Hale killed, you know, his sister, like, 1 year ago, and Peter Hale's still wandering around and they're not trying to kill him. So why do you think he's so concerned now?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I think first of all, that Chris just has a really hard time, as much as he preaches to Alison to stay out of things, I think he has a really hard time doing that too, especially since we saw when Scott sort of tricked him into going to the murder scene, and as soon as he saw what happened, he realized that he had to do something to help. And I think maybe Alison going to that hotel and the name coming up again just sort of revitalized these memories, and he just decided to look into it. And once he figured out that it was Deucalion, I don't know if he realizes Deucalion specifically is in town or not. I don't know, maybe he's met him in his apartment building or something, but I think that, you know, he was just curious, went to Gerard to figure it out, and maybe now he's just gonna seek vengeance.
I just find it odd that he'd need to seek vengeance on this guy when more direct, you know, like Derek, for example, biting his wife, and he's let Derek live. But I think this is more than a family vengeance thing because of these kind of comparisons, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's true.
I have absolutely no idea.
But yeah, I mean, so we think that Chris has been keeping Gerard wherever he is for a while now, or Gerard's been keeping himself there or whatever. Maybe it's just a, like, hotel or a, you know, something like that, like a little old hotel. The rooms are numbered, so it's either a hotel or some kind of hospice, but who knows? I mean, I'm not trusting the fact that he's, like, sitting around in a wheelchair, like, you know, being all sorry for himself, because you know who else did that? Peter Hale in season one. So yeah, I'm not gonna really trust that means anything about his condition. But the black blood, the fact that he's still spewing up black blood, is kind of what do you reckon that means?
You think he would be dead by now with all of the blood pouring out of him all the time?
You'd hope. Sorry,
yeah.
Scene.
That was fine.
Can you imagine if there's anyone out there whose favorite character is legitimately Gerard? Like, I know people in, like, fandoms like bad guys sometimes that like, you know, like Peter. But it's like I've come across people who, like, they're Harry Potter fans, but they legitimately like the Death Eaters and identify as Death Eaters. And I'm not talking about, like, Snape and, like, Lucius Malfoy, who Lucius Malfoy is, like, a dick, but he's kind of, like, got this, like, cool thing. Or, like, people who have, like, any redeeming qualities. Like, they are like, I like all the Death Eaters and Voldemort. It's like, and they like have the Dark Mark tattooed and stuff. And it's like, what is wrong with you? And I get like, oh, it's so ironic. I'm in Slytherin or whatever. I don't care. But the people that are seriously like, oh yeah, I like the Death Eaters. All of the main characters are annoying. I'm like, you've got problems. Imagine if there's someone whose legitimate favorite character is Gerard. If it is, can you like just? If there's anyone listening to this whose legitimate favorite character is Gerard, can you just stop listening to us or go get some help? Because it's a bit worrying.
Sarah, you don't have like a death mark tattoo or anything, right? We're not offending you right now.
No.
Okay.
It's like fandom is fandom, but it just. And I get heaps and heaps. There's so many, like, sympathetic Slytherin characters and stuff. So that's not, like, the issue at all. But there are some people who, like, legitimately identify with the Death Eaters, and I'm just a little bit concerned for them. So hopefully no one out there is like, yes, Gerard's back! I mean, they might be for, like, plot purposes, but not like, I missed my favourite dude. anyway.
We've seen how far Gerard has gone before to stay alive, so it's probably not beyond the bounds of possibility that if he's not the Drac, that he's working with the Drac, and that's why he's still alive, despite being obviously still very ill.
Yeah, I mean, if he is the Drac, it definitely adds, like, a bit more weight to the scene between, like, Harris and whoever was killing him. Like, I think that, you know, it definitely sounded like someone he was kind of familiar with, and we already sort of suspect that Harris and Gerard, like, that Gerard has been, like, using Harris before in season two, like, with the whole, like, Kanema Master and having the car around and stuff. So if it was Gerard, it could definitely be something that was already an ongoing relationship. But I still also like the idea that Harris was, like, pimped out to every supernatural bad guy that came to town. Okay. So, basically, we had, we did take listener feedback from this episode. We actually kind of mentioned most of it throughout the episode. So, I'll just say quickly, like, again, Leah Rao, we talked about her tweet, and Lydia, someone whose username is Methamphetabine, gave the whole thing about whether the No Hope for Derek was foreshadowing, and that sort of tied into the whole idea about whether Jennifer's evil or not. And then Sarah Koske also brought up some ideas about, like, the Wolfsbane, the effects of the Wolfsbane on, like, human versus werewolves, and, like, what ended up happening with Wolfsbane in this episode. So this is not a feedback section. We kind of covered it all during the course of the episode, so nothing specific there. But Teen Wolf Takeover is still going on Hyperball, and we have all sorts of articles going up. We just put up one yesterday, which was written by me, about scenes from the movie, or ideas from the movie that would make kind of cool additions if transferred in right way to the TV show. And some of the ideas in it, I don't know what I was on when I was writing it, but I personally think it's pretty brilliant, and I don't think very many people have read it, because I don't know how many people have seen the original movie. But seriously, if, like, you should go and read, even if you haven't seen the movie, please go and read this article, because I think it's funny, and Karen thinks it's funny, so.
Yeah. I don't know if that really is saying much, but I did. The part with Peter was like, oh my god, I want it to happen in the show so bad now.
I also have started following a new person on Twitter who is a friend of my friend. I was commanded to follow her because she has a small white Bichon Frise dog, which she has named Derek Hale. And she posts all sorts of pictures of Derek Hale is doing this today, or Derek Hale doing these hilarious tweets about Derek Hale, which are so funny that I can barely breathe. And I'm going to start retweeting them to the podcast account because they are that funny. So Derek Hale of Bichon Frise is going to become a frequent topic of my storytelling, I think. And I have a friend who has even suggested starting to illustrate all of her tweets about Derek Hale and what Derek Hale is doing with cartoons of the actual Derek Hale doing said things. So I'm going to start retweeting Derek Hale tweets onto the Twitter pretty soon. So that's something you can look forward to if you need a cheering up from this trauma fest. I believe someone tweeted from our account earlier today that we need the address of MTV so we can send them the bill for psychiatric treatments for everyone on the podcast, because this episode was a rough one. It was brilliant, though, like a really, really good episode. I honestly, I didn't know they had it in them. This episode was amazing.
Yeah, definitely.
So did you have fun, Sarah, despite all the trauma we had to talk about?
Oh, it was great fun being on it. In the pauses, it was sort of like, oh, wait, now it's my turn to talk back to the podcast.
Yeah. Sorry that, you know, we had to bring you on to talk about horrific death and Styles crying and things like that. Anyone got any final thoughts about anything, like, from the episode that we didn't mention or anything like that? Anything you noticed or little things?
Not really. I loved the episode. I thought it was great, and definitely can't wait for next week, and I cannot wait to find out what the heck Lydia is.
Yeah, seriously. The only little thing I noticed was that they kept focusing on the number, like the 201 number going up, like the, you know, it was 198 and then it went to 201. Boyd pressed 201 into the machine, and then Isaac flicked the channel like 98, 99, you know, 200, 201. So that's like 99. So if there had been 198, 99, 200, 201 is three suicides. There were four werewolves there. And we assume Isaac, Boyd, and Scott, because they're the werewolves on the team good guy. But those aren't actually the three werewolves that tried to kill themselves. So does anyone have any thoughts on the fact that it was actually Ethan instead of Isaac, except from what we mentioned, like that Isaac didn't have enough guilt or was deemed not as much of a threat? Whoever, all I can think of is that whoever was doing it sees the Alpha Pack and the Beacon Hills werewolves both on not their side, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, those are my thoughts too, that there's really no distinguishing between Ethan and Scott, you know.
Yeah.
I have nothing to add. The 201 thing, unless it was just sort of making us think that, you know, these three people were actually going to go through with it, even though we all know that there's no way, because we all know next episode is the death.
There's a death next episode? I don't know.
Did somebody not say?
They probably have been, but I try not to do too many spoilers now. Like, I was reading spoilers in the, you know, at what was coming out before the season started, but as we've been going, I haven't. I mean, we're about due one, but we've seen all of the, like, things now. Like, this episode, you know, we saw in the trailer, we saw Melissa's throat getting slashed, and we saw Derek getting stabbed with the pole, and we know Derek didn't die, and Melissa didn't really die either, so all of the deaths could be, you know, anyone is fair game now. All of the fake deaths have happened, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I'm not looking forward to it.
Okay, so I think that that's everything for now. So, you know, we will all say bye.
And a big thank you to Sarah for being on.
Thank you for having me. Oh, it's been great fun.
You are welcome. So hopefully you enjoyed the trauma and and that you enjoyed the episode in general.
I didn't enjoy the trauma, but I definitely enjoyed sort of taking part in the discussion.
Cool. Okay, well, we'll all say bye for now, I guess. So bye to Karen. I'm like, who are you? Bye to Karen. So the next time, will you be going to Comic-Con before we record again, or?
No, let's see. The next episode's going to be on the 15th, right?
Yeah.
So, no, I'll be leaving for Comic-Con the next day.
On the Tuesday.
Yeah, so, that's going to be interesting. Maybe we'll have to think about that.
Maybe you can record from California if you get Wi-Fi or whatever.
Yeah, well, I'll be in New Jersey on the 16th and then leaving the 17th out of New York City. So while I'm in Jersey, I may be able to record. I think I could probably do that.
Okay. Well, until then, anyway, I shall, yeah, everyone, goodbye to you all.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Feeling that we're dead, I got this feeling that we're dead, and there's nothing more. I got this feeling that we're dead, I got this feeling that we're dead, and there's nothing more. I got this feeling that we're dead, I got this feeling that we're dead, and there's nothing more.